The following is a Barrett Sports Media production. We do the digging, so you don't have to.
We've got breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Bringing you the biggest stories from the industry you care about. This is the Media Noise Podcast.
Well, let's hear it.
Now, here's your host, Dimitri Ravanos.
We don't do a whole lot of guests on this show, and that is by design. For the most part, I like Media Noise to be about issues more than it is about people. But earlier this week, our sports media MVP bracket wrapped up, and from a 15-seed spot, Michael Kay wins the whole thing. And it is largely on the strength of his karma. It is all about the loyalty and the following he has built as the afternoon host at ESPN New York, as the play-by-play voice of the Yankees on the YES Network. And so I thought it would be a lot of fun to have Michael on this week because, in addition to talking about the bracket and how this thing unfolded, it would be great to have a conversation about New York sports radio, about building an audience, and about his broadcast philosophy in general. So I'm going to get out of the way, and I'm going to let you sit back and enjoy my conversation with Michael Kay. So I guess first things first, congratulations on winning our sports media MVP bracket, and B, if you would like to berate me for advocating for you not even to be in the tournament, I'm here to take my comeuppance.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. that's why I did what I did, because I saw the list and it was nice to be on the field of 64, but every one of those people on the list was a national guy. So I said, I don't belong on this list. I mean, if you're going to be a local guy, you want to be a local guy in New York, so
of course
that's something I love. But I'm not a national guy; I shouldn't be matched up against those people. So I said, let's create chaos here and make sure that I win. But I read what you wrote, and I couldn't agree with you more. I didn't belong on that list.
I'm going to sort of dive into the idea of creating chaos here in just a bit, but I do have to know. Have you walked into ESPN New York or to the media room at Yankee Stadium and started trash-talking everyone yet?
I have not been in ESPN New York studios since last March.
Oh, geez,
I
guess
that's
true.
We're still doing everything remotely. So I have not trash-talked, and there's really nobody in the media room at the stadium. I just go right to the booth. So I haven't had a chance to, like, pound my chest, but,
yeah.
It's funny. I don't want to sound like Pauly Purebred. I hate competition between people in our business because it's so hard to have a job. And I hate the Emmys. I hate all of that stuff. I don't even I've told my bosses that yes, I don't even like being submitted as an entry in the Emmys. It's a real seamy part of the business where we're going up against each other. So I saw a competition. I said, well, let's have fun with it, but I don't buy into that sort of stuff.
Was that the pure idea behind the way you embrace this promotion, is just let's have some fun and create chaos? Or did you sort of view this as an opportunity to really just sort of show off how engaged your audience is? Because we saw this last year, and I mentioned this in the piece I wrote, we saw this last year with Matt Berry when we did the SportsCenter bracket. He was really adamant about getting his people involved, and he asked people to vote for him. He worked all the different connections that he had, and he had a very similar groundswell of fan support just like you did, and it was a something he talked about having a lot of fun with, but also just wanting to show the power of being active and being available to people on social media.
Well, I think the fact that, if you look at people, at least with radio shows locally, I have a heck of a lot of Twitter followers. Mm. So I just thought this is a great way to mobilize and have fun and see if they would actually, rise up and support me. And the funny part is, Dimitri, is that I just came up with Carmi as I was talking. It came off the top of my head. We had never, ever referred to the followers of me as the Carmi. So that kind of took hold, and that was fun, and that's something that we'll use moving forward. But after a while, I said, this is a great way to engage the fans on social media and also on the radio. And it was funny because when I would mention it, I wouldn't mention it until maybe halfway through the show, and I'd be trailing. I think I trailed in every single one by a lot. And then I just mentioned it in the middle of the show, and, you know, I could be down like 80 to 20. And after I mentioned it, within like 5 or 10 minutes, I'd be up like, you know, 75 to 25. It was that much of a shift. So when that happened the first time, I said, well, we have something here. Let's continue doing this, and let's see if we can win this thing. And that's exactly what we did. And I think the people that I call the Carmy, I think they had fun with it. I think they like seeing the power that they had. And that's exactly what it was. They showed that, you know, if you can mobilize, you can actually do things.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, they mobilize for you and by extension for Don and Peter as well. And it's a real testament to the connection you guys have with your audience. I wonder, as you look back at the lifespan of your show, are there different benchmarks you can point to as moments where you realized, hey, we have something here, what we're doing is working?
I think when we started doing summer shows, end of summer shows at the beach, you know, we do it at a restaurant at the beach, and the place would be jammed, and you know, then the Christmas shows, and, you know, people would be waiting outside. Don and I, this even before Peter,
right,
started saying, well, it's getting some traction. And then when people start repeating some of your silly things that you say, then you knew that, you know, you've kind of taken hold. And really, we've had a really long run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ESPN really stayed behind us. You know, for the longest time, we got our butt kicked. You know, we were on 1050, so we didn't have a great signal, and we're going up against an iconic, you know, forever talent in Francesa. And you know, the final affirmation was when we finally started beating Francesa, and you know, you can't get bigger than Francesa was, and all of a sudden we're beating him. So it was a slow boil, so to speak, but I'd say we really felt good about it like 5 or 6 years ago that there were people that were listening. And there are people that felt, and we've always preached this, you know, it's kind of a family. We look at the people that listen to the show as part of the family. And I think that, you know, the family, like, started to stick together and, you know, defend. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, one of the things that I've always found interesting about the way that New York sports media is covered is you talk about your audience as a family. And if you have a group of people that are dedicated to you in that way, that is a win. And I wonder how frustrating it can be to have the number of those people, or what the number of those people is at any given moment, under a microscope where, you know, hey, maybe FAN has, you know, 0.01 more people this particular cycle, but it's not like what the Michael Kay show is doing isn't working, or vice versa when you're ahead of them.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think radio ratings are the most ridiculous, yeah, inexact science I've ever seen. I don't understand them. I think, you know, even, you know, when we were beating Francesa and finishing first, I thought our audience was larger. We have a really strong TV audience on YES as well. And I think that takes away from the radio rating, because if somebody's watching on TV, why would they be listening on radio? So I think that something like this, where you can actually see the people that might not have meters, but now Twitter is almost like a meter to me. And if you could, like, say something and all of a sudden 1,000 people just voted for you in a contest, that to me, that's more telling than a radio rating, which I don't get, Dimitri, that, you know, in television, you get a rating of a show the next day.
Right.
Radio, for some reason, it takes 3 weeks. So you can't even act in real time on what worked and what didn't. The whole thing is so totally flawed. I don't get it. I understand that's the only way you keep score. And, you know, in the last 5 years, it's been a positive for us in the way the score comes out. But I still think it is so antiquated. It just doesn't work to me.
I want to get into your, I guess, philosophy and thinking in terms of the way you host the radio show. You know, New York sports radio, and really a lot of the Northeast, is sort of built on listener calls. So I wonder, when you are doing segments where you do have people calling in, what is going through your mind in terms of finding that balance between giving the listener on the line a voice and also keeping the guy in his car that will never pick up the phone entertained?
It's a tightrope. I like to get the listeners involved. And I think that even the guy or gal that doesn't pick up the phone, I think they enjoy listening to phone calls. I really do. I think that's part of sports talk radio. But the tough balance, though, is, you know, we have three people that are going to talk. So everybody's ringing in on every topic. So even if you take a phone call, everybody, like, rings in. So in a perfect world, I think we would take more phone calls because I think that engages the audience. But in terms of logistically, it's hard when you've got to balance three voices and then bring in another voice with the calls and sometimes with guests. And, you know, sometimes I'll look up and our conversations are so easy and they're not like planned that you look up and an hour has gone by and it's just the three of us going back and forth. And then, you know, should we involve people more? So it's always prevalent in my mind, you've got to take phone calls.
So you and I disagree there in terms of phone calls, and I wonder if that's a regional thing, because I've spent my whole life down in the South, and, you know, I know that if I turn on Yes, which is how I consume your show when I do, you know, I'm tuning in because you're the voice of the Yankees, and I think you know a little bit more than the average bear. I tune in to hear one of Don's rants or Peter going off on, you know, whatever it is he's going to go off on, be it sports, pop culture, whatever the case may be. I don't particularly care what Joe in Brooklyn thinks. Do you think it's a regional thing? Do you think it's because, you know, sports media in the Northeast has been built on phone calls for so long, or do you think I'm way off base there?
Well, I don't think you're off base, but I would the one thing that I would disagree with you, a lot of Don's rants come because of a phone call.
Yeah, that's
fair. Somebody said something. So it's not like you're going to Joe in Brooklyn to give you insight on the Yankees. You're going to Joe in Brooklyn to give an opinion where Don might not agree, and all of a sudden he doesn't plan his rants, but when he does it, they seem to go viral. So I just think it's like a strange brew that you have to just get right. Sometimes you get it right and it tastes great. Sometimes it doesn't taste that great that day. But I don't know if it's regional. I just think that here in New York, I mean, you know, Francesa and Russo kind of set the template. And there were five-hour shows that they didn't even have guests. They just took phone calls.
Yeah.
Now, I think that just taking phone calls is sometimes lazy. So we don't do that. I know Don, you know, who's just as much a part of the show as me, he hates guests. I like guests.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we're kind of doing a balancing act, but I think guests are important, especially experts, and I think phone calls are important as well.
So I would be remiss if I let you go before we talk a little bit about the baseball season and the Yankees. I do wonder, as this season is still very much in its infancy, even though we're seeing fans come back in, you know, large numbers in Texas, smaller numbers elsewhere around the country, how quote-unquote back to normal does it feel for you this year?
Well, it's not back to normal, Dimitri, but it is closer to what it was. I mean, last year, doing games from the stadium, and it was empty, and then doing road games from a completely dark stadium, it had a real dystopian feel to it. It wasn't fun. It was a real heavy season.
Yeah.
It was a dark season. And, you know, we were right in the throes, and we didn't see any, like, light at the end of the tunnel. So I think the fact that so many people are getting vaccinated, and you see a lot of trends going in the right way, it makes people feel that we're getting closer. But still, you know, opening day at Yankee Stadium, you're used to 50,000 people.
Right.
You know, there was 10,850. So better than zero and inching closer to normalcy, but still not quite there.
It is, as we inch closer to normalcy, as we get deeper into the season and more people are able to come out to the ballpark, do you still expect the Yankee fan base to be as tough on players, managers, skids, slides as they always are? Do you think there is going to be something a little bit different this year in terms of the joy of being able to be there finally?
They booed Giancarlo Stanton on opening day, so nothing has changed. And then they booed Aaron Judge the other day. They were up 7-0, and I think he struck out in the seventh inning. And this is in a game that he hit a home run.
Right.
And they booed him then. So fans are going to fan, let's put it that way. So I think the most difficult part of the pandemic to me has been, I think that if you do a talk show and you talk pandemic and you talk people dying, there is an unbelievable split in this country that is polarized, and they turn it into a political thing. And I got to be honest with you, I think that has hurt us.
Yeah.
because Don, Peter, and I, we're pretty much in lockstep about how we feel about what's gone on and how it's been handled. And I don't like to be political on the show, but if you give an opinion on the pandemic, you are kind of like being political. Mm. It shouldn't be that way, but you are. And I think that that is hurt. I really do think that's hurt. I think people don't want to hear about it. And it's hard because sports and this stuff intersect all the time, all the time. And I think that when they do intersect, I think you alienate 50% of your audience. And you just hope that at some point, you know, they'll put the radio back on. You know, if they're switching to another station, they'll remember that they had fun. But, you know, this last year, there's been some hard, dark topics. And usually our show is light and fun. But, you know, we had to address what was going on in the world and the country. So I think that has hurt some shows, especially shows that want to tackle issues. And that's what we do. If there's an issue, we'll tackle it.
I want to thank Michael Kay for being a part of the show this week and also being a good sport about the fact that I still am not convinced he belonged in our tournament. But it was a lot of fun to chat with Michael. So if you have the opportunity to support him, whether it is the radio show or calling Yankee games or just to give him a shout on social, please do that. As for what we are talking about and looking forward to next week, I got to say, I will have some thoughts on Aaron Rodgers as the host of Jeopardy. I wrote a piece at the site that is up right now where I talked to Stu Gotts, Bomani Jones, J.R. Jackson of CBS Sports Radio, and Andrew Marchand of the New York Post about, could this really happen? Like, is there really a chance Aaron Rodgers could be a quarterback and the full-time host of Jeopardy? I am very skeptical, but a lot of those guys laid out reasons that they could see it happening. So go check out that article. We will talk about it more next week. I'll see you then.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Thanks for listening to the Media Noise Podcast with Dimitri Ravanos. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. And check back soon for new episodes. To stay up to date on the latest sports media happenings, visit BarrettSportsMedia.com.